Quick disclaimer, information in this podcast is for general informational purposes only and is not intended to be treated as medical advice. Always consult with your healthcare team before making changes to your diet, lifestyle, supplementation, or medication.
When it comes to medications, be educated, be informed, so that you can be empowered to make the best decisions for your health. But please remember that you should always consult with your medical doctor before making changes to your medication.
Welcome to Type 2 Diabetes Talk, the place where we chat about what really works to treat type 2 diabetes and prediabetes naturally with nutrition and lifestyle. If you're looking to optimize blood sugar and A1C, lose weight, reduce medications, and improve your overall health, this is the place to be. Now, here's your host, type 2 diabetes nutrition specialist, Dr. Jetta.
Hello and welcome to episode 17. In last week's episode, I spoke to Sue Robotti from MedShadow, where we touched on many important things around medication side effects, being educated about these things, asking questions when it comes to meds, and how to start that potentially awkward conversation with your doctor. In this episode, I continue my chat with Sue about her role on the advisory panel of the Federal Drug Administration, Wegovy and Ozempic, and some more surprising facts. It's all part of this conversation to spark a deeper level of thinking that empowers you to make informed decisions and take charge of your own diabetes health. In relation to this series of podcasts, there will be additional information on our website at type2diabetestalk.com. So head over to the website to find the show notes with some helpful links you can use for your own medication research. If you're a member, log into the member site and head to the library where you'll find lots of extras posted with the show notes, including our updated medication guide and the letter you can share with your doctor to help start this all-important conversation to avoid, reduce, or stop medications. Okay, let's dig into the show.
There's a terrible statistic that, and I'm just here to scare your listeners about using medicines at all. And medicines can save lives. I get that. And that's important. But the FDA is very busy approving new drugs every single year. And we're now at the point where, on average, 4.5 years after a drug has been approved by the FDA, when it's been out in the larger marketplace and more people have taken it, 32% of those drugs, the FDA finds out that there's such serious adverse events or side effects happening with that drug that they have a health warning go out about it. They mail out letters to doctors. They may put a black box warning on it. Sometimes they have to pull it off the market. So if your doctor is suggesting you take a drug that's being advertised on TV, if you're in America or New Zealand, or, you know, ask your doctor, is this a new drug? And the doctor says, yes, it's one of the newest and best. A good answer is, can we start with an older drug, please? If I have to take a drug, I want to take one that we know a lot about. Miracle Drugs, DES, the drug that was given to my mother, was a miracle drug. And there are advertisements in the medical journals about these big, healthy babies. I was 9 pounds, 10 ounces. I was a big, healthy baby. But 20 years later, you find out, and in my case, it caused infertility. I would never be able to have children. Most drugs, you don't have to wait 20 years. But take as little risk as you can, stay as healthy as you can before, so that you don't need drugs.
What an amazing statistic. And I'm just going to repeat that for anyone who didn't quite pick that up. But Sue just said that 32% of drugs approved by the FDA within about 4 years are getting serious adverse effects that require warnings sent out to all the doctors. And this is for new drugs that are approved. And I just want to say that quite impressively, Sue's also the sole consumer representative on the FDA advisory committee. So I'd love to talk about this because I also know you voted to approve one very popular drug at the moment that we all know about, which we're going to get to in a moment. But before we go there, Sue, I wonder if you could tell our listeners, how did that come about?
Well, you've made it sound very impressive. It's not quite that impressive.
Well, I wouldn't say that, Sue. It is perhaps more impressive to us than you. Anyway, sorry to interrupt. Get back to the FDA committee.
The FDA has multiple advisory committees, and they're required to have one consumer representative on every advisory committee. So the advisory committee that I applied for, well, and that's all I did was I found out that they exist and I applied for the position. And it's quite hard for doctors to get onto these advisory committees, but it's not as much competition for consumer reps because people don't know about it.
That's really interesting. So what committee are you on, Sue?
I'm on the Drug Safety and Risk Management Committee, which generally doesn't meet on its own. It meets an adjunct with the analgesic committee, which is pain meds, or with pregnancy drugs, or with cancer drugs. You know, when there's a super high suspected risk, they'll bring us in. There are about 25 people on advisory committees, and there are about 20 different advisory committees. One consumer rep on each one. There's also an industry representative for pharmaceutical companies, which seems a little crazy, because it's a pharmaceutical company that's come to the committee to ask them to approve the drug that's being presented. So I don't know why they need an additional person on there. But the doctors on the Drug Safety and Risk Management Committee that I'm on are actually very safety oriented. I do appreciate that. There are doctors out there who really do take into consideration a holistic point of view.
Yeah, that's such a good point, Sue, because we don't just have the standard medical doctors out there. So it's great to know that these doctors are taking the time to be part of these committees. And it reminds us that we can also try to find doctors that might have a more holistic point of view if we can, that might put drug safety on a personal level as a priority.
I actually left my doctor and I interviewed three doctors before I chose one, asking about what their training was. Were they perhaps a doctor of osteopathy instead of an MD, which is a little more holistic? How often they prescribed certain drugs? Did they have any relationship with a pharmaceutical company? So you can look up online and find out if your doctor has been paid for giving presentations on behalf of a pharmaceutical company.
I know not everyone has the capacity to change doctors, though, Sue. In fact, I hear that in some areas it's impossible to find doctors, and some people wait 3 months even to get an appointment. So I want to emphasize again here that if you'd like to switch doctors but you can't, that's the reason why having these conversations with them is so important. Don't be scared to ask them questions, and as Sue said, don't be afraid to go as far as asking them about their relationships with any pharmaceutical companies. I mean, that's also something that I would want to know about a doctor.
I don't want people to lose faith in their doctor, but doctors have accepted something as simple as lunch from a pharmaceutical representative are statistically much more likely to prescribe that drug than another equal or even superior drug. So your doctor would say they can't be influenced by that, but the statistics say differently.
It's a very important point, Sue, because conflict of interest, that really is a conflict of interest. And we see that in research all the time, where authors of manuscripts and studies are actually working for pharmaceutical companies or influenced by companies. Well, everyone likes to think they're non-biased, but it just can't be the case. So we just know that this happens, and oftentimes people aren't declaring their conflict of interest in research really either. And doctors especially should be declaring their conflict of interest if they've been paid by the drug company, right?
Yes. And it's exactly why we don't accept pharmaceutical money or support at all. Because even if you intend to be even-handed, you just can't help but know that, boy, our budget really needs that advertising budget from a pharmaceutical company. I maybe don't want to ruffle feathers with this article. Maybe I won't publish it.
Exactly, exactly. And it's very difficult to stay objective and not be tainted in some way if you have those connections.
When you are seeking out information, look very carefully at the source of information. So often there are patient advocacy groups. Look at who they're partners are.
Just for our listeners, Sue is air quoting when she said look at who their partners are.
Again, with the air quotes. I do a lot of air quotes. I apologize. But if you look at patient representative groups, they will often partner with pharmaceutical companies, which gives them inside information, they say, on drug development and what's down the pipeline. But it also taints what they tell their membership. So look for patient advocacy groups that don't accept pharmaceutical members or money. Look for websites like MedShadow that don't accept pharmaceutical money and support. It's painful to not do that. We have less money than if we did. But what's the point of having a mission if you're going to undermine it?
I agree. And look, this is the thing, people across the world, we see big pharma and big food influencing a lot of decisions that are made in big places. And that is what is actually driving ill health as well, not wellness. But Sue, coming back to this topic of being on the FDA committee, because I know you were on the FDA committee that voted to approve Wegovy and its initial application for diabetes in 2019. And our listeners will know of Ozempic and Wegovy very well. It's a semaglutide. It was initially approved as treatment for diabetes. It's now become huge in weight loss. But I just wonder if you can tell us a bit more about that process of being on the committee when they approved Wegovy.
Yes, I was on that committee. Wegovy was being presented only for diabetes. The people in that trial had an average weight loss of between 5 and 10%, not the big weight losses you're seeing in the subsequent clinical trials for weight loss, but when they're using for diabetes. And it had some good benefits. The hypoglycemic issue was less likely to happen. But this is another classic case of a drug being, we were told on the committee that it was well tolerated, but when we read through the documents, it's not particularly well tolerated. So 20% of the people in the clinical trial who were taking Wegovy quit the clinical trial because they could not tolerate the gastric distress, the diarrhea, vomiting, stomach upset. It was, of course, they lost weight. You couldn't keep food down.
Right. I've heard from our members that the gastric side effects can be horrific, but even so, we've clearly seen the drug approved.
We did approve it because for those who did stay on it, for diabetes, it was fairly effective and it was a good alternative. It was never considered a first line or a first choice drug, even in our conversations. Interestingly, even though everyone's talking about it now, I did vote to support use in diabetes. But what happens very often with the FDA is that a company will come in and get approval for one indication of diabetes, and then publish a whole bunch of articles on how really it's much better for weight loss and for heart disease. And doctors can prescribe it for anything, even though it's only been approved for diabetes at that time, they could prescribe it for anything.
Wow, that's crazy. So the companies don't do any additional trials, but they just go and publish papers that say this and that. And so the doctors are all of a sudden like prescribing semaglutide for weight loss instead of just diabetes.
Yes. So some companies would not have gone back to the FDA and gotten the secondary approval for these. So kudos to the pharmaceutical company for doing the right thing. They did more clinical trials to prove that with the right support, with increased exercise and with telephone support on losing weight, you could lose up to 20% or 18%, I think it was, with Wegovy. So it was a little bait and switch, I thought. You know, you got diabetes and all of a sudden everyone's using it for weight loss.
And interestingly, I mean, I know there are clinical trials that are showing that the weight loss is significant, but we also know that, well, are people going to keep taking that drug for the rest of their life? Because as soon as they stop taking the drug, they put the weight back on and then some.
That can't be good for your body. Everyone knows that that's not good for your body. And if you're dependent on a drug for your lifestyle, that's not a good reason to take a drug. One of the many reasons that you don't want to take a drug, unless you really have to, but you really want to be very careful before you commit to taking any drug for the rest of your life, like a statin or a Wegovy, is because it will clear through your liver or your kidneys. That's how drugs get into your system. they weren't made, your liver and kidneys weren't designed by nature to take large doses of medicine and redistribute them throughout your body. So it stresses them, and they can handle a certain amount of work. But year after year of drug after drug on top of it, you know, the cough syrup, the cold and flu medicine, the headache remedy, the statins, the Wegovy, the diabetes drugs, you start getting such organ strain that they don't work properly. And then you think your drugs aren't working properly. It's not. It's your liver is metabolizing it the way it should, because it can't. It's exhausted. That's a total non-clinical thing. I'd like to remind people, I'm not a doctor. Exhausted is probably not a good clinical doctor term.
Yeah, look, I think that with medications, you should always talk to your medical doctor. We're just having a conversation here about the different side effects and making informed decisions and empowering yourself to take charge of your health. That's what this podcast is really all about. But Sue raises a good point about the toxic effects of medications. They are not natural to our body. So while we know medications can be useful, the whole point of these discussions is to make you aware that overprescribing is common and reducing medications is possible, which is why we need to bring this important topic into people's awareness and have these conversations.
Are you ready to take charge of your diabetes health? Dr. Jetta's T2 diet program has been clinically proven in a randomized controlled trial to dramatically reduce A1C, weight, and medications in just 16 weeks. The T2 diet program will guide you step by step to discover an eating plan that feels natural and sustainable for you, and most importantly, works to get results. Learn more and join the program today at type2diabetestalk.com/programs.
The thing is, there are a lot of side effects around any medication. Like you said, Sue, with Wegovy and semaglutides, we know Ozempic and Wegovy, they're basically the same thing. I've had reports from our members about that exact same thing. Like you said, Gabe said she ended up in emergency twice in 3 days because of the severe gastric effects of Ozempic. And also, don't discount the rare side effects. I mean, we get told about rare side effects that these medications can have. So, for example, Mandy said there's a risk of 1 in 100 people for acute pancreatitis, which is inflamed pancreas. And guess what? She was one of those 1 in 100 people. Now, 1 in 100, that's quite a lot of people, but it doesn't sound like maybe you wouldn't be one of those people, but certainly Mandy was. And then what's interesting is both Ozempic and Wegovy also put people at risk of thyroid tumours. And that is a real concern that I'm not sure. And no one knows, in fact, now. Even the FDA reports that, well, we don't know what that risk is long term.
Well, it goes back to the don't take a new drug. If you've failed on all previous drugs and you are, you know, morbidly obese and, you know, your systems are failing, yes, take the drug. But if you've got other alternatives, don't take a drug within the first 4 or 5 years that it's been approved, because clinical trials include maybe 1,000 to 3,000 or 4,000 people. That's it. And millions of people are taking Wegovy now. Millions of people. And when you say 1 in 100, it sounds like you're not going to get it. I don't want that risk. 1 in 100 means if there's 1 million people taking that drug, which is typical when you get with the drug like Wegovy, it's going to be more than that. That's like 10,000 people, I think, if I move the zeros in the correct order. That's a lot of people getting pancreatitis. Hospitals are going to notice that uptick, because that's not a very common disease.
Right. And again, we just need to do our homework, ask questions, and be aware of the side effects and the pros and cons of any medication. And so how frequently then, if these new medications are being flagged in the FDA, they're seeing, you know, 32% of them coming with adverse effects and they're giving the warning to doctors. But is it just warnings, or are they taking these medications off? Are they educating consumers? What's happening there?
There's bad stories about drugs that are being used in the market. And so you can't always, I mean, the FDA hasn't even pulled off that drug PE. That's the drug that was used instead of Sudafed, which makes me very angry as I take a breath to calm down. I understand that there are repercussions of taking drugs off of markets, but there are worse repercussions for leaving them on. So take as few drugs as you can and do your best to stay healthy when you are healthy.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You definitely have to take charge of your own health, branching out and educating ourselves again and talking to different people, having good sources of information like we provide here on Type 2 Diabetes Talk and like Sue has down at medshadow.org, influencers that aren't sponsored by Big Pharma and Big Food. And look, in diabetes, it happens everywhere. It is an over-medicalized health condition when we know diet and lifestyle is just as powerful, can be more powerful. And I'm not one to say, don't take your medications. I think it can be helpful, but certainly you don't want to be solely relying on medication in the long term. And if you can, you want to try to reduce your medication, have those conversations with your doctor all the time about how can I do that? If I get my diet and lifestyle on track, if I bring my A1C down, are you going to support me to do it? Don't just go along and be like, oh, well, just take another medication on top of a medication on top of a medication. So I hope that the conversation that we've had today with Sue has really enlightened you, I guess, on lots of things. But the most important thing, Sue, is just to ask those questions, isn't it?
Yes. Yes. And be the boss of your medicines. And every time you go to the doctor, take with you a list of every medicine that you take, why you take it, how long you've been taking it, how much you take. You want to say, why am I being prescribed this drug? Do I still need it? Can you substitute a less powerful drug? Or am I taking the right amount at the right time? These are questions that should be asked over and over again.
Exactly. Ask those questions, people, because as Sue said, you need to be the boss of your own medicines. Most importantly, I want you to know that it is possible to avoid, reduce, and in many cases, even stop meds. I know this from experience, and I know this from scientific research. We see reduction and cessation of medications happening in studies, and of course, we saw the impact of the randomized control trial of my T2 diet program, where 87% of people reduced their medications in just 16 weeks. Avoiding, reducing, and in many cases, even stopping medications is possible. So again, always be asking those questions. Well, thank you so much, Sue, for joining me in this conversation to help educate and inform our listeners.
You know, I'm so happy that the results of your study of your work are so clearly benefiting people. That must make you feel great and make your clients feel even greater.
It really does, Sue. It's something I'm very proud of, and I will continue on my mission to help people with type 2 diabetes and pre-diabetes treat their condition naturally with nutrition and lifestyle so that they can live the very best and healthiest lives possible. So thanks again for joining me. It really has been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you.
I hope you're enjoying this series of conversations designed to empower you to take charge of your health through education, informed decision-making, and communication. As we've been chatting about these past few episodes, we frequently hear about medication prescription and overprescription. But something we don't hear much about is the practice of deprescribing medication. So in the next episode, we're going to dig a bit deeper into that. Be sure to tune in. And again, please share these episodes to empower others far and wide on this very important topic of discussion. I'd really appreciate that because together we can make a big difference. Dr. Jeddah, over and out.
Thanks for tuning in to Type 2 Diabetes Talk. Please subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform. And for episode replays, episode notes, and more, visit type2diabetestalk.com. New episodes are available Tuesdays, 10 a.m. U.S. Eastern Time, or your time zone equivalent. Thanks again. We're truly grateful to be a part of your life and help make a real difference.